I'm Kieran Ryan for MoneyWeb, and today I'm being joined by Justin Clark, the Chief Operating Officer for Orbvest. Orbvest was set up to simplify investment into offshore commercial real estate. And what's interesting about this company is that it has a particular niche in the United States around medical real estate. We discussed that in the first podcast we had yesterday, and today we're going to continue that discussion just to find out what it is about this market that is so attractive and why it should be attractive to South African investors. Justin, welcome.
Kieran, thanks for having me on again.
Let's just pick up where we left off yesterday. So for people who may not have heard the first one, what is it that is attractive about the medical real estate market in the United States? And maybe you can just cover what states in particular you are looking at.
Yeah, a great place to kick off. So, you know, I think the thing is with any type of commercial or industrial investment that you make in property, you have to look at the ultimate exit. Return is great, cash on cash is great, but what happens when you want to sell the asset at the end of the day? If you look at the disruption that's happening as a result of technology, some of it is negative for real estate. For example, retail. We know that most retail is moving online, especially in the U.S., super fast. What isn't moving online and what is being affected differently, and that is medical. So what is happening and why do I say that technology is changing medical? Well, the hospital complexes are having a major decline in inpatients. So why? Because you can go to your local doctor's rooms and you can have a procedure that previously you would have to go into hospital for 5 days for. And that is the effect of technology. So what it's effectively doing is it's meaning that people don't have to go to the big hospital complexes. They can go to a local practitioner who specializes in that particular type of service, and hopefully that will be close to your place where you live or work. So there's this kind of decentralization of the way that services, medical services are being delivered, and this is directly because of technology. The other thing, Kieran, is that you have in the States specifically this burgeoning population of baby boomers that are now over 65 and that have money and that are reaching the point where they need to see a doctor, what do they say, six times more often than people younger than them, as I said in the last conversation. So you have this burgeoning population that's getting older and the technology is making them live longer. So you have this huge amount of people that need lots more medical services than ever before. So, you know, we see it that that medical has at least a 20-year window of growth, and that's why we are absolutely hyper-focused on this area.
It almost sounds like the Uber model being applied to the medical industry in the United States. If technology is coming in and disrupting the hospital business model to that extent, this does open up a door for you, which you're obviously exploiting now.
Yeah, well, I like the Uber concept. Not quite sure that it fits, but yeah, I'll take that anyway, Kieran. Thanks.
One of the things I did want to ask you was, what states and why are you focusing on particular states only?
So when we looked at where we could apply this medical model, we took the specific – first we started with countries, and ultimately we discussed why we looked at the USA and why we like the USA. But then in the USA, you have bad areas and good areas for medical. And there are a number of reasons. But really, the area that has excited us the most is, if you take Texas, it's an area they call the Texaplex. And it runs from Fort Worth down to past Austin, down to San Antonio. I think that's the I-35. And if you draw a line down to Galveston, it includes Houston. And that is the Texaplex. I think that area has an economy the size of France. To give you an idea, it is quite phenomenal. It's only one little sliver of Texas. So we've identified certain cities there, certainly Dallas-Fort Worth, where our latest project is, San Antonio, Austin, we like a lot. Houston has got the biggest medical complexes in the USA, and there's a reason for that. I won't go into too much detail, perhaps, but it's to do with the medical insurance and medical claims that's captured in Texas. So it means that there's a huge concentration of medical in specifically in the Houston area. That's it. But because we do talk diversification, we just done our first project in Manalapan, which is just outside New York and New Jersey State.
And are there tax benefits to the decision to locate in these particular places, Texas and New Jersey?
That is correct. Texas is advantageous for the vendors, not necessarily particularly for us, because it is a tax-free state. Very easy to do business and very easy to hire and fire, and that is probably why it's growing. I think, you know, there are a number of other fundamentals that we look at. You know, always if you're looking at commercial real estate, two of the fundamentals are, do you have growing population and do you have growing GDP? And if you've got both of those, then the wind is behind you, and you know, you can almost make a bad decision and still win. But those are two of our prerequisites. And you know, I think that you know, if I remember correctly, the growth in that tech for tech area is in excess of 13.5%, which is, you know, which is a good population growth.
Wow. Okay. Now, what you're doing is you are looking for co-investors to come along with you on this ride. And what the investors actually get here is they get an investment in a specific building. So it's not a pooled investment. And the historical returns that you've been able to achieve is around about 2%. It's not fixed at that, but you did say that there's a little bit of a cushion built into that. But that's kind of what you're targeting, 2%, in other words, 8% per year. And then you would look to exit the investment after 5 or so years. Is that correct?
That is correct, Karen. So basically, the thing that we do is we take a building, we identify the building because of the fundamentals. We do not take a chance. We do not buy buildings that are in distress and fix them. That is somebody else's job. We buy profitable, stable, income-producing assets. What we do then is we offer it to the market. And we take that investment, and this is a highly regulated environment. So we our IP really is learning and discovering how to do this most efficiently. And what we've done is we have identified a low-cost exchange. It's we actually use the Seychelles. It's called the Merge. And we and investors actually invest in a public stock on that exchange. So you actually have an ISIN number, you can look up your stock on Bloomberg, and you have all of that transparency that comes with any bourse in the world. And so then the all bourses have to comply with the World Federation of Exchanges and all the necessary Oxfams and SATs and all that. So you know, you have the benefit of the exchange, you have the benefit of the transparency, and at the same time, it's actually a very efficient way of us tooling many investors into one particular investment and being compliant.
And are the investors able to sell that investment on the Seychelles Stock Exchange if they want?
So we purposefully have not floated, and that's why I guess we can use the Seychelles Stock Exchange, which isn't particularly liquid. But the disadvantage of a floating equity is it becomes more like a REIT or a property fund. And that means that you are susceptible to the market. We are anticipating, as I guess a lot of your listeners are, that there will be a recession upcoming in the US, and we want to be recession-proof. So if you float that equity, then the value will be the sentiment of the market and not underpinned by the actual assets. The beauty of a non-floating equity is that the actual value of that equity depends on the underlying asset, which is the building, which, because of our long leases, is not really going to decline. Two things that contribute to the value of the building: it's purely your NOI or your net operating income, in other words, the rental less the expenses, and you multiply that by the capitalization rate, which is a rate which is established by the market in a particular area. And those things, you know, we don't anticipate will change a lot in a recession, unless it wasn't a complete disaster, in which case it would be a temporary, it would be more of a temporary thing. But most of our leases are long leases, and that's why we make sure that we are recession-proof.
Right. Final question. I presume that these buildings are underpinned by long-term leases. Is that correct?
Yeah, Karen. We obviously take them over, and then we try and extend the leases. And the beauty of medical is that they are generally quite happy to sign a long-term lease. Think about your local doctor. You know, he generally doesn't move around a whole hell of a lot. But you have some additional things that apply in the States. You have a thing called a certificate of need. And if you apply a specialty medical service, you have to do effectively an environmental impact assessment of the need for your particular service in that area. So once you get that thing, it's extremely expensive to get, and it is a time-consuming bureaucratic process. Once you get it, it's actually pinned to the building. So So you can't leave. So you actually want to secure them because you don't want to be chucked out after a few years and somebody else come and take over the goodwill that you've built up. So you try and get a long lease. And to give you an idea of how that works, Medical 25, which is a property that we have just done in Atlanta, we just funded it out about a month ago. And the average lease period was 17.4 years.
Okay, so the average lease period is 17.4 years. That's a lot better, yeah. All right, Justin, let's leave it at that for the moment. I would like to pick up with you in the next one. What is your outlook for the real estate market in the United States going forward? You did mention you want to be recession-proof, and I'd like to go over with you how you exactly are going to go about that. For more information, visit www.orbvest.com, and that's spelled orbvest.com. But thanks very much for joining us on this particular podcast.
Thanks, Karen. Look forward to the next one.